I loved Rebecca Ferguson and her crazy crew of people, and I loved this girl and the relationship that Danny Torrance and her had. This kind of story, like other people having the shine and were able to manipulate things, I thought that was really creepy and really interesting. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
I think its weakest parts are when it leaned into, oh, we're a shining sequel, rather than it just being its own thing.
It just seems to just be a constant roller coaster of just emotions and things going on, which is just classic Mike Flanagan, really. You know, compared to other horror films we might have seen recently, this is genuinely scary stuff.
Hello, everyone. On FlixWatcher today, we have Kobe.
Hiya.
Lucy.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Doctor Sleep. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Lucy and Sean. Sean, over to you to say hello and introduce yourself, please.
Hello, I'm Sean, a blog writer for films, TV, games, and kind of media in general. Talk about what's going on, thoughts on upcoming projects, projects that have just been, and all realms of that media.
What do you mean by projects? Your projects or other people's projects?
Other people's. I'd never dare to try create my own projects. So it's so much easier to judge others rather than create my own.
Judge arm's length. fair enough. And Lucy, who are you?
I am a senior writer with What to Watch, where I talk about film and TV. It's a great job. I also have a podcast I do in my free time called the TV Time Podcast, where people come on to talk about their favourite drinks and their favourite TV shows. So it can be anything under the sun. It's a listener's choice, a guest's choice. They can come on and bring whatever they want and we talk about it. So nice little light-hearted podcast, I think.
It's what we need these days.
So your podcast, what are the favourite TV shows that you recommend? I've literally had a friend who just said, I finished The Bear, what else is next? And then I asked him what else he's seen, and he said not much. So I'm like, fuck's sake. There's at least give me some kind of help.
Get my long list out.
Yeah.
See, the problem with my podcast is that we can talk about shows from years and years ago. So it doesn't have to be recent. It's just a favourite.
Of course.
So, you know, we've had all sorts on. So we've had classics like The Simpsons. You know, we've had favourites of mine like BoJack Horseman. You know, it's a big Netflix show. I'm a
Love
big fan
BoJack.
Of that.
Love BoJack.
I want to do an Inside Number 9 one at some point, which is one of my favourite BBC sort of dark comedy, I guess is the best way of putting it, like an anthology comedy.
Well, anything with Steve Pemberton and the guys from...
they're brilliant. Trying to think of like a modern example for you, because most people bring like, you know, a cult classic or something that's been quite long running. Have you delved into the world of like the Rings of Power or anything like that? Because they're huge at the moment.
I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan.
No, and that's at the completely time, fair. Neither am I, but I have to cover it for work. So, I mean, I say I have to. Oh God, what a chore, you know. But fantasy's not my genre, but yeah.
At the moment, there is too much TV. It's almost kind of stressful. There's so much stuff I want to watch.
Far too much. You'd like have even to like invest the in Mighty Ducks, don't you? It's just
Always ask me what to watch, and I'm like, I don't know. Go on the website. I can't think off the top of my head. Honestly, I just can't do it. Yeah. There's just so
many.
You
come on here and I ask you the same thing. I apologize. Sorry.
Do not worry. It gave me a chance to sort of justify myself there, so don't worry about that.
Yeah. So, you've brought us Doctor Sleep.
I have.
So, first of all, can you tell us why you chose it, Lucy, and then give us the synopsis, if you can do?
Yes. So Doctor Sleep I chose because it is a rare example of a horror sequel that is as good as its original, in my opinion.
You put your cards on the table there. Interesting.
Doesn't happen often. I think it's a very strong follow-up from The Shining. I think it's an incredible film. I love the book. I love Mike Flanagan. There's a lot of reasons I chose it. I just think it's an incredibly strong, genuinely terrifying film that is on par with The Shining, which is probably a hot take, but I think it is.
Well, let's get your timer ready. You've got 60 seconds to give us the synopsis of this excellent film, apparently.
Okay. All right, so years after The Shining, which was in 1980, Dan Torrance must protect a young girl with similar powers from a cult known as the True Knot, who prey on children with powers to remain immortal. And obviously Dan Torrance is the son of Wendy and Jack Torrance, the latter who you saw have a massive breakdown in the Overlook Hotel in The Shining. So Dan is an incredibly traumatised adult from obviously everything that happened in the events of The Shining, and we follow on from his trauma in adult life, and that's where we are. 26 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
there we go.
I guess we have to address the first film without spoilers. Where do we rest on The Shining? Let's go for yourself, Sean, first.
Oh, I mean, The Shining is just, it's the classic, really, isn't it? The following that it's gained, not just from the film itself, but all the stories that have come out from the film, Daniel Kubrick's kind of approach to it all, and the actors, and yeah, you just can't beat a Jack Nicholson performance, really, can you?
Helen with The Shining.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. I'm just kind of like thinking that it is a great Kubrick film. That people would question whether it's a great Stephen King adaptation is a slightly different thing. And I think they're slightly different things. But yeah, I mean, The Shining's great. It manages to be scary in many different ways. And kind of its legacy has basically, it's been on everything from the Simpsons to, you can just kind of like see, when you say The Shining, you just see the here's Johnny face through the door. So I think it's impossible not to have had some kind of relationship with The Shining at some point. So yeah, I mean, it's probably my favourite Kubrick film, possibly, I think.
More than Eyes Wide Shut.
I haven't seen that, but I don't think I need to rewatch that one. That one's a bit of an odd one.
I mean, you said at the top, this is an excellent follow-up to an excellent film. So The Shining must be ranked quite high for you, Lucy.
It is. I do like The Shining, but Helen is right. It's very different from the novel. So I think anybody who's read the novel going into The Shining, they're going to get a different experience.
Sure.
I prefer the novel, I think, but that doesn't mean the film is necessarily bad. I just think the novel the novel offers more, as novels often do, more context, more... Just more substance, I guess. However, The Shining is obviously, you know, you've got all the iconic motifs that, you know, are referenced time and time again. The twins, axe through the door, all sorts of carpet. Awful stuff, you know. Typewriter, the carpet, exactly. There's just so many iconic motifs in The Shining. Jack Nicholson, incredible performance, probably one of his best performances. And I just think, obviously, we'll go on to it in a bit, but Dr. Sleep was a good sort of, it pays a lot of good tributes to The Shining while being its own story. And I just think it was really cool to look at what has happened to this poor child that had to suffer these things in the Overlook. And how is he dealing with it? And obviously, you know, spoiler alert, not very well. But you know, it's just one of those things.
Turns into Eve McGregor.
It's just crazy. Yes, yes, he does. You know, which is, you know, you could turn into worse people.
It's a bit of a glow up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I've only seen The Shining once, and I think typically when I say, you know, there's some films you perhaps want to watch when you're a bit younger, but I think I need to rewatch The Shining because I think a lot of it just kind of went over my head. And I think about what you're saying, like read the book to get a bit more context about what's kind of going on, because I think I enjoyed, again, this is, I'm sure it's at least 25 years since I watched The Shining. But I enjoyed and understood more about what the shine is going on in Doctor Sleep than I did whilst watching The Shining as a film. And I could get more into it and understand a bit about why things would be going awry in the first film. I really enjoyed this. My slight downer side to it is that I felt in the final act, it went a bit too much back into The Shining. I felt, did it need to go back to the Overlook? Did it need to go have the recreations of Jack Nicholson, for example, because I think up until that point, I loved what they were doing in its own world, which has, you know, progressed since then. I loved Rebecca Ferguson and her crazy crew of people. Crazy is like just putting it lightly. And I love this girl and the relationship that Danny Torrance and her had remotely and then together, and then this kind of story, like other people having the shine and were able to manipulate things. I thought that was really creepy and really interesting. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was not astonishing. I need to go. I don't know why I didn't watch it in the cinema. I'm quite disappointed I didn't, because I think it would have been quite a cool experience.
No, I mean, I definitely agree in the sense that I think its weakest parts are when it leaned into, oh, we're a shining sequel, rather than it just being its own thing. And when you had, like, I don't know the name of the actor, I'm sure he's very good, but never get someone to try and replace a Jack Nicholson performance.
Yeah.
I think you'd have been much better off showing, just hinting at the fact that the character is still in that building, that, you know, you turn the corner and you can quickly see him as he's passing by, but that there didn't need to be this full-on scene, because you just remember the classic and kind of how well that was done, and those bits were never going to live up to it. But where it really shined was where it was doing its own thing, while very much you are aware that it is a sequel.
I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good way for legacy sequels to address them. I mean, one of the main legacy sequel that came out recently is Top Gun Maverick, which, well, it pretty much copycatted everything, but went to like 11 too stupid, didn't it? rather than sticking to the original plan. Helen, Doctor Sleep.
So I did not see this at the cinemas because I was led to believe that it was a bad film, and I was sad that I did not get to see it at the cinema because I really enjoyed it. We've had Gerald's Game on here, which is another Mike Flanagan, Stephen King one. And watching this, I think in Mike Flanagan, we kindly find someone who is able to put on screen the slightly more fantastical elements of Stephen King. And I just think that he kind of gets Stephen King more than perhaps maybe Kubrick has done. And I think the casting's really great. I'm a big fan of Ewan McGregor, so it was good to see him do this. And Rose the Hat, great hats she's got, and amazing caravan there. And I just really enjoyed it. And I thought it was really interesting how he approached some of the kind of like the seeing in stuff, which is quite a hard thing to visualize. And I just thought it was really an interesting approach that he did. And there was some like really, really genuinely horrible stuff, particularly with like the little kid with the baseball and some degloving action, which seems to happen quite a lot, which is always some fun times.
The scene, quite near the start, where potentially Ewan McGregor's Danny Torrance has had his rock bottoms, when he has the night out and he meets that lady who's got the kid, and then you find out, I'm not sure if it's in real life or by a dream, that they've both like died and no one came to find the kid, because they're used to hearing them scream, and then potentially dead. That was like that's gross. That's like a horrible, horrible like scenario. But it was creepy. It was scary. There's one other scene that, which I wasn't that big a fan of, was when they're kind of shooting the like that caravan gang in the, what's it shooting? What, they kind of had the face off of the caravan gang in the woods. Yeah. I thought that was it seemed a bit like incongruous with the rest of the film, where it was like going inside other people to get that feeling. You know, cross-reference with like the scene in cinema with Rose the Hat in the soup. She's just shopping, and then suddenly the girl pops into her head, and it's like, oh, okay, this is like a real kind of interesting tete-a-tete. And then it just becomes another scene with in other action films. I thought it kind of undersold itself with that sequence. But I think, yeah, I think it was really, really good fun. in all honesty, really good fun.
Yeah, no, I think that scene did feel a bit misplaced. That it just felt like, right, we need to kill off a few characters before the third act. I know, a nice big shootout.
Yeah, I can see that. I do think the emotional journey it takes you on is quite wild, though, because you said that, you know, it's quite a fun film, but then you like as Hella mentioned, you have that horrific torture scene, which is very hard to watch, especially on the big screen. I was like, my God, this is very uncomfortable. It just seems to just be a constant roller coaster of just emotions and things going on, which is just classic Mike Flanagan, really. You know, compared to other horror films we might have seen recently, this is genuinely scary stuff, though, I think. It's like, whoa, this
sucking
is intense.
The basic, they call it obviously like the steam, but it's like
steam,
like the souls, isn't it? And keeping them in like the little jars and then like getting high off some little steam party.
Has that occurred in other films? I've seen that kind of motif somewhere, I'm sure, where they've just like kind of sucking. Oh, it's a film we've had on recently, where they had Charlie Cox in it and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, Stardust.
Yeah, Stardust, where the witches.
it's quite an odd comparison, isn't it?
Very, very different kind of film.
That's like the witches, isn't it?
Yeah, the witches steal the soul, don't they? And they rejuvenate by sucking in the essence of a young star in this case. So we've mentioned Mike Flanagan a few times here. This guy seems to have come out of nowhere in my mind, and just like kicked ass. And we Haunted Hill House, Bly Manor, and. So he's got TV work, which everyone says is pretty much astonishing. Maybe I think understand that Bly Manor isn't as good as Hill House. But yeah, Gerald's Game, which we had on here, which is creeps me the hell out.
Oh, it's back to Gloven scene. Oh.
Yeah, my God.
Grim.
And Heard Midnight Mass is astonishing as well. So what do we know about this guy?
I just think he's brilliant. Like, he's become like Netflix's horror staple, which I kind of love. Mm. They've got him on the phone like, have we got another series? We need some horror. I've just covered The Midnight Club for work, which is very good. Very jumpy, very unnerving, about sort of kids in a hospice who've all got terminal illnesses and are trying to cure them. And it's very dark, but it's really good. The less you know about it, the better. It's worth a go, though, I reckon.
All right, guys. Anything else you want to say before I head to the scores? What about the girl? I can't remember. I keep calling the girl. And I like this the way they communicated via that wall and stuff. I think that's why it took me out when they went into the field and started shooting people.
Oh, her name's Abra, yeah. She's very sweet. Yeah. I like her. I like the use of mirrors and stuff and the kind of different like ways of communication. Like, mirrors are just really creepy for some reason. It's one of those things, right? Like, it's really
mirrors are really creepy for some reason. Well, one of his early films was like, Oculus, wasn't
like
it?
Somebody else, yeah.
Yeah, but it's that kind of sometimes. Well, when used right in horror, it just feels like another world that you can't control as much. And yourself is in there, and I think that's very much how it felt in Dr. Sleep. She was a great addition. I think kind of it probably wasn't the actress throughout, but when they first introduced her as a young girl and she just said she could do the magic trick as well, even that felt very not unnerving, but just a bit, you took you back a bit, like, ooh.
It's kind of nice that they kind of slowly revealed why she was the focus of this film, and that she's probably the most shiny of the shiny people. So much that Rose the Hat was like terrified of her, just even though she hadn't met her, she knew she was aware of this one soul who could easily dismantle them, but also would be the source of a lot of steam that would drive them on forever if they could capture her.
I just wanted to go through some of the names because I was really into them. So obviously we have Rose the Hat, and we also have Crow Daddy.
Abracadabra.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then there's Snake by Andy, who was kind of like the younger female who basically like took people to the cinema and like slashed them up, like paedophile guy. This was like pretty sinister, and she gets kind of like addicted to steaming, or what we're going to call it.
I thought she was a great character.
I thought she was quite underused. Like,
yes,
when
that
shoot off scene took place, I was expecting, I guess, her to survive it and be part of the kind of last sequence or so, but a bit disappointed that it felt like it was cut short.
I think the introduction to her, and because that brought us into the story about why Rose the Hand people chose some people to steam. I don't know what the best terminology is, and some people to keep and kind of bring into their merry men. She said with Abra, like, she didn't want to bring Abra in because she would just like, am I right in saying that? But she said that she just didn't want to bring Abra into the team because she would like destroy everything almost.
Yeah, I think that was more of a, she didn't want anyone stronger than her as part of the pack, I guess. She saw herself as the leader and didn't want that threatened in any way.
There's a couple more. There's Barry the Chunk, who was the guy who didn't really do much, but he was just kind of there. And then Grandpa Flick, who is also like the creepy night visitor in Gerald's game, the really like weird looking guy who is alive but looks dead. Like the whole thing with him when he dies as well is really like creepy and disturbing. And I was also, sorry, just because I'm having a nose. So Henry Thomas, who was in E.T., he's Elliot, and he plays Jack Nicholson playing...
Is that him?
Yeah. Jack Torrance.
It says that he's the bartender, I thought. Okay. But yeah, Henry Thomas and Mike Flanagan have had, he's in pretty much all his stuff, well, at least his most recent stuff, isn't he? That's interesting. And I'd like to put a shout out for Cliff Curtis, who is, who plays the guy who kind of puts Danny Torrance, Ewan McGregor onto the straight and narrow and then dies in the woods. Also, I didn't expect him to die in the woods, I thought it was a bit unfair.
It's like, I can kind of see what's going to happen to him. He's for the chopping pile. He's a goner.
He's expendable.
Yeah. Bless him.
Okay, well, let's head to the scores, guys.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog? The podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
So welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5. If you want decimal places, you can have them. And we will start with you, please, Lucy, with your recommendability.
I'm going to go 3.8. Because a lot of the things you guys said are completely fair about sort of, you know, maybe some ham-fisted references to The Shining, maybe things that some that some Shining fans might not enjoy as much as I did. Also, it's incredibly graphic in places. It's incredibly disturbing. It's a very scary film. So if people don't really want to vibe with that, that's completely fine. But I do think it's a pretty solid 3.8.
Sean?
I'm going to go higher than that. I'm going to go 4.5. I was surprised at how much I liked it. I was the same. I kind of, part of me stayed away from it because it was a sequel to The Shining, and I thought that was just disgusting. You can't follow up to that.
Sacrilege.
It really was. And then the other part is Stephen King can be quite notorious for endings, and I didn't want... He was able to make The Shining good, and I didn't want Dr. Sleep to ruin that, so I hadn't read the book, I hadn't watched the film. I think the way it was advertised as well, when it came out in cinemas, I don't think they did it justice for actually how good a film and how good a ride it actually was going to be.
So is this the first time you watched it then?
Yeah, this was the first time I watched it, just because it was one that I don't think I'd have ever actually stuck on. You know, if it was on the TV a few years down the line, maybe so, but I think The Shining was always such an iconic movie, and I thought there's no way they can follow that up this far on with a good sequel. And so just left it and was really shocked at how much I enjoyed it.
Helen?
Yeah, similarly thing. I was surprised, which is kind of bad, like, to be like, oh yeah, I thought it was going to be shit. But I was a bit like, I thought it might have been a bit... I didn't really know what the story was, and didn't obviously want to read too much about it. And I think it was quite badly marketed as well. Like, what is Dr. Sleep? Because it's not called like The Shining 2. It's like, oh, what's Dr. Sleep? And it's a bit confusing with the title. I know there are like a lot of hardcore Shining fans who basically just hate it just because it's trying to be a sequel, which I think is a shame. I think I kind of see them a little bit as two separate films, even though they've got like the same characters, just because like the vibe and the focus is just so different. So I think if you're like me, like you like The Shining, you think it's good, but you're also prepared to open your mind to a sequel that is slightly different in tone, but is still entertaining, then I think you will enjoy this. It is a little bit long, you know, pushing the two and a half hours, and could have done with a bit more tighter editing. But overall, I really enjoyed it. And I think if you kind of like have that open mind, then you'll enjoy it too. So I'm giving it a solid 4.
I'm going to give it 4.2. They must have done a number on myself, Sean, and Helen in terms of like the advertising, because it just didn't seem that appealing to a lot of us. And I think they've lost out on people like ourselves who have been like, yeah, let's go and see it. And also, I do have this thing where I just kind of think like previous successes, even though wasn't that big of a fan of Shining, I'm like, I can't repeat that. No, there's no way. Much to my detriment, one of the biggest being like how much I loved Spaced, and then everything that Nick Frost and Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright did after, I was like, they can't. So I didn't watch Shaun of the Dead for ages, because I thought that they're not going to beat that. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. So I need to get over myself. We need to get over ourselves sometimes and just say what's the thing. But the reviews must have just been like not that positive. Yeah,
they were. Yeah, so, very mediocre to baddish leaning.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that was part of the advertising, that people didn't know what they were going in for, and maybe didn't want something as horrific as they got, because there are some scenes that are hard to watch. And yeah,
I'm not sure if I remember this correctly, but they seem to be coy about it being a Shining sequel as well. They didn't seem to. Because it is really a straight up sequel, but what I remember there was like, it was billed as like, yeah, kind of a follow up featuring Danny Torrance. But this is, for me, it is a sequel, especially with the way they leaned into it in the panel. That's a lot more. So I don't know if that put people off the way they build it or intrigued people. Yeah, 4.2. Lucy, repeat viewing score.
Probably a 4. You could probably go back and have a good time with this, and you could probably spot some new things. Actually, I mean, this is kind of what I'm going. It's my own arbitrary scoring system. I'm sorry. It's kind of like what I would go back and rewatch for. You know, whether it's finding new things or just because I fancy watching it. You know, I think there's probably things that I missed because I've only seen it once. I'd like to see it again. I just think that there's probably more Easter eggs to The Shining that I probably missed. There's probably just little things like that, and just. I don't know. I think as well for Rebecca Ferguson's performance, I just kind of want to see her do more horror, to be honest with you. So I think I love her performance. I think for her alone, I would recommend rewatching it. I just think her performance is brilliant. And I have read the book of this, and she did a really good job. So yeah, I'd say 4.
Sean?
I would give it a 3.5. I think the only reason I'd lack on it a bit is because it does kind of go on just a tad too long. And I think part of that is that last act very much does feel like a, here's the best bits of The Shining. You remember that. You loved it. And yeah. So from that bit of it.
Recently on The Shining.
Yeah. And so from that bit of it, it's not only are you asking someone to rewatch Dr. Sleep, you're asking someone to rewatch parts of The Shining over again. But again, you know, I think the horror will never really fade from it. I think from the first introduction, where the kind of group introduced themselves, and she sat there with the flower, and then they all are just surrounded in the forest, gave me a bit of a chill, and I don't think that will ever go away.
So what was your PPV score there, sorry, Sean?
3.5.
Helen?
I enjoyed watching it. but watching it again, the length would really put me off because it did feel quite a long watch. And just there's like so many more films, and I've seen a couple of like Mike Flanagan's other films, but I would choose watching one of those I haven't seen over rewatching this. Maybe in like a few years, or I don't know. I'm not sure. 2.5 down the middle.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure I'm going to watch it. I'm not sure when I'm going to watch it again. I think I'll probably do a Shining rewatch and then a this rewatch if I had like a cheeky, like 5 hours to myself to watch them both back to back, and in the middle have time to order a pizza or something. So that kind of combo sounds quite nice and comforting in a way. So yeah, 2.2. Small screen score. Lucy, did we all see this first time on Netflix?
Yeah. I saw it on the big screen. So okay. I have actually seen this one yet. I loved it on the big screen, but I do think it's a good Netflix movie as well. Mm. I don't think it really benefits from the big screen experience. I think, you know, watching it on Netflix, especially if you've got a good home setup, for example, if you've got like, you know, good sound and stuff, it would work quite well. The scares were certainly quite something on the big screen, as they normally are. But I think it's a tough one. Maybe like 3.5. I don't know. I feel like I would recommend seeing it on the big screen, but it's not really like essential. You know, there's nothing wrong with watching it at home as long as you're not watching it on like a tiny little screen, which, you know, we've I saw in your little notes on the email, like, you know, it was something to do with like no smartphones. It's like, yeah, let's not do that. let's say 3.5.
Sean?
I mean, I would give it a 4 because I was quite naughty. I watched it on a tablet I watched it on a tablet first time, but it still scared the shit out of me. I was in public as well, so there were some scenes I'm just going to turn that away from the public.
Where were you watching it? Can you remember?
Where?
Yeah.
I was on a flight.
Oh, no.
The classic flight where you're it's either like something really gory has happened, or there's like breasts and you're like, oh,
and you're just like, it's not what it looks like.
Yeah.
I did that with like watched Fleabag on the train, and I was like, oh, I'll just watch this comedy. And
there's so many scenes that you just
just like, can I turn this away for without looking?
The worst part of it was I was in a middle seat, so there was no real.
Oh, no, you were literally stuck.
Having to go back and forth. But
like, who's this sicko next to me watching children getting murdered?
It's just a nice little pastime. But yes, it still very much scared the shit out of me on a small screen.
Mm. Helen?
Well, we all know because of terrible marketing that the opportunity to watch on the big screen has passed. I enjoyed watching it on my screen. Probably not going to make the trip to the cinema if it kind of came back out to see it. So, I'm going to give it a 5. Why not? You can have like little breaks as well if you need them for like having a wee in your own home without disturbing anyone else.
I feel I missed out by not watching it in the cinema. I think I'm not going to watch it often, but I think I would have enjoyed that experience in the cinema with other people. So I don't think you need to, but I think the collective experience of being there, experiencing the nonsense and the awesomeness would have been nicer. So I'm going to give it a lower score. Give it a 3.2. Engagement score. Lucy.
So this is, oh God, I mean, I wouldn't turn this off, to be honest, because I love it. I just think it's really great. I'm really biased.
You love it, but you only gave recommendability of 3.8. What's it, Karen?
Because of the audience that I'm recommending it to as a general audience. Again, absolutely. I was kind of going off my arbitrary sort of recommendation scale of what I recommend it to every horror fan. No. Do I love it? Yes, if that makes sense. So I feel like I can understand the argument that it's not great and whatever, and that it's too reliant on Shining references. But I think it's great. I like the third act. I don't know, I feel like probably a four would work. If I think I'm doing the order of that scale right.
Makes sense.
Let's do that.
Sean?
It's a bit of a difficult one because the length does put me off, and I think if I was to watch it again, it might steer my engagement away a bit. But when I was watching it, I was fully committed. There was no way I was turning that off the first time. So kind of for the first time, mixed with future watches, I give it a 3.2, I think.
A blended 3.2 for future. Helen?
Yeah, I was just like looking back at my notes to see, like, generally if I've had like a not very engaged time, then I've got like loads of notes, and these are just kind of like random ones, like cat. It's like a cat in it and stuff. And Ewan McGregor plus toilets and dead babies. So those are the kind of notes. So obviously, like, really engaged in it because none of them make sense reading back now. So yeah, I'm going to give it like a 4.5. I was pretty engaged, and I think it is a little bit long, but I think it deserves your time. And then, like, you know, he's a director who cares about like what he puts on screen. You can obviously tell that he spends a lot of time thinking about how he's going to show things and stuff. So you should give him his full attention. He's a good guy. We like Mike. Let him make more films.
Good old Mikey.
Yeah, I'm going to give it, let's go for 4.5 as well. I think it didn't stick the landing with going back to the Overlook and that kind of thing, but I still wanted to know where it's going. You know, the lockbox things, and it took me all the way through to the end. It loses a few points for just, I think it could have finished more on a peak. So that gives an overall score of 3.78750. Decent. I thought potentially it was going to be higher based on the start. But guys, one thing we should say is go to Twitter. Find us on Twitter. If you're listening and you haven't followed us on Twitter, you can find us at FlixWatcherPod, as well as telling people about latest stuff and insights and news on just TV and Netflix stuff in general. We do put a shout out before we record, such as this one. We're reviewing Doctor Sleep with Lucy J. Bouglas and Sean Higg, 444. 89215.
Catchy as ever.
It is. I mean, I could ask you why you chose that, but you know, fine. Have you seen it? Gives your thoughts and a score of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. We have quite a few responses for this. Lucy, do you have this Twitter post? Yeah.
I do.
Can you pick one to read out, please?
Yeah, so we have one by at Russ Loves Movies, which says, not quite the best King adaptation, but certainly a contender for my favourite. Richly drawn, meticulous in pace, with some masterful performances. Finds balance between the competing visuals of King and Kubrick whilst remaining a Flanagan film. A comfort watch for me, 5 stars. So that's a glowing review, and a very articulate review, if I must say so myself. That's a great review.
It's a recent guest, Russ.
Yes. Yeah, that's a very, very well-written review.
Sean, do you want to say the next one?
Right, so this is from Claire Ellen Hope, who puts it at a 3 star at best for me. Drawn out pacing, limited characterisation, and just not engaging. Saw it at the cinema and was left very disappointed. So one of the few that actually did get to watch it at the cinema and didn't enjoy it as much, I guess. But again, you know, I think we've kind of touched upon that maybe the marketing for it just wasn't done right. So the people that did go and see it didn't get the film they were expecting, and we didn't go see it because it wasn't the film that we expected it to be.
Helen?
This one's from a regular contributor, Lee Thomas. Big King fan and really enjoyed the book. Thought the film was excellent. I've got it number 7 on my King movie letterbox list. Nerd. The scene with the baseball kid was horrifying. I'll watch everything Mike Flanagan does. 4 stars.
Lucy, do you want to give us another one?
Yeah, so we've got Callum Cooper says, Doctor Sleep is such an underrated sequel. Suspenseful, visually haunting, and serves as a great thematic and narrative compromise between The Shining's book and film. Plus, as a RWBY fan, I'm not sure what that is. I enjoy the textual, subtextual Easter eggs to it with Abra. Flanagan on top form.
He came back with 4 stars because he didn't give his stars.
4 stars, yes. There we go. Yes, you are correct. I messed up it. Yeah, 4 stars.
Don't forget the stars.
Very important.
And we have one last person who says, I've not seen it. So why did you bother commenting?
Maybe they will now.
Watch it now.
But Billy, go and watch it.
Yeah. Billy and Melissa, go and watch it. Yeah, we're telling you to go watch it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for bringing Dr. Sleep to us. Can you tell us where we can find you online and say goodbye to everyone who's listening?
Yeah, so you can find me at Lucy Jade Buglis on Twitter or at TV Time Pod, which is my podcast. And thank you again for having me. It was a blast.
Superb. Sean?
You can find me at The Sofa Cinema on Insta or thesofacinema.com, where I post and blog all the time. And yes, thank you as well for having me. Loved it.
Splendid. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to watch Dr. Sleep.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.